Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm Pat Sloan. I can't tell you how much I adore handwork. I maybe don't do it as much as I'd like to, but it is one thing that when I see it and when I see it done well and when I see handwork that speaks to my heart, I get very excited. I've been following Rebecca Rehnquist's work for many, many years, and she's chatted with me before, and she has a new book out called Rebecca Rehnquist's Embroidery Workshop, and we're going to talk all about her book. So thanks for being here, Rebecca.
Thanks for having me back, Pat.
You know, I have to tell you, I think I told you this in a note, but I about fainted when your book came because it is
thank you.
It's so gorgeous. It's so you.
Thank you.
Did you kind of get that feeling when you opened it the first time? Did you go like, oh, did it knock it out of the park?
Yeah. You know, I feel lucky to have worked with such an awesome team on this book, and it does feel like it really is me, and I'm really grateful for my editor, Melanie, for sort of pulling that out of me and making it sort of more me than I could have made on my own. And
yeah.
I think the photographs are really amazing. Johnny Miller did an amazing job with those. And yeah, it's bright and colorful and layered and textured, which are all words that I would describe to describe my own artwork. Yeah.
That's really, really wonderful.
Tell me
a little bit about your style, Rebecca, because it is not a traditional embroidery style, is what I would think. It is much more sort of eclectic, and you use a lot of found objects. Can you tell me about it?
Well, I think traditional embroidery has a sort of reputation and tradition of being really precise and neat and tidy, and I wouldn't use any of those words to describe my artwork. I approach embroidery as a way of drawing, and you know, there are lots of different ways to draw, just like there are lots of different ways to embroider, and my work tends to be sort of messy at first glance and layered and develops sort of intuitively over time. And most of the time, my artwork starts with the base layer of found embroidery, things that I find at thrift stores and things like that, and then lots more found embroidery that gets cut up and collaged on using my sewing machine.
You know, I'm really intrigued by all of that because it is, I mean, how do you think about your embroidery? Because it's, you know, you're designing this and you use a lot of words. I mean, how do you approach putting a piece together?
Well, people often ask me if I have a piece figured out before I begin, if I have, you know, the grand vision or a drawing of it before I start. And the answer is that I almost never do, but I do start from lots of drawings in my sketchbook and sometimes words from my sketchbook, but it most often starts from one little image on a bigger piece of fabric, and from there images get layered and layered and layered. And I'm often working on more than one piece at a time, so sometimes an image that's really working on one piece, I'll sort of trace that and add that image to another project that I'm working on. So there's often a lot of kind of cross-pollination in the studio as ideas develop. And embroidery, you know, my work takes a long time to make because although I do use the sewing machine a lot, I also do a lot of handwork. And so, as you can imagine, it's really time intensive. And so the pieces develop over time. And the idea that it might have started out with one idea in mind, and by the end, it's telling a totally different story.
You know, I really think that shows because it doesn't look like, you know, when I look at it, I don't think, oh, okay, this is where she went. You know, this is kind of where it started. You know, because I design also, I probably look at things differently than other people. But yours is like, it's real organic. It's like it just sort of flowed. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the layout of the book? Because you have so much great content in there.
Thank you. Well, the book really developed through teaching. So I wanted to make a book that encompassed many of the things that I include in my longer workshops in a book format so it could reach a wider range of people. So the book's divided into four main sections, which are stitch, trace, draw, and layer. And there are exercises, and sort of what would be a demonstration in a workshop is broken down into an exercise in the book. And then from there, there are projects based on those sort of technique demonstrations or technique exercises at the beginning of each chapter.
And you also have a little sampler envelope. What is in there? I didn't open mine yet.
Right. So in addition to my artwork, I also own a company called Drop Cloth Samplers, and I sell those through my website. And we wanted to include a sampler project in the book. And so the first project in the book is the sampler of hand stitches, which is in the stitch chapter. And as a sampler, it's pre-printed, and it's meant to teach you the 9 hand embroidery stitches that I introduce in the book. And so that sampler that's pre-printed on fabric is just ready to pop into your embroidery hoop. It's right in the back of the book in a little envelope and in everybody's book, which is really kind of cool bonus. Yeah. You don't really notice it until you get to the last page, and then it's almost as if somebody has added a little something extra, which we have.
Yeah, a prize. We get an extra prize at the back. Yeah,
you know, like Cracker Jack.
Yeah, you know, what also reminds me of your designs is the sort of, because you do a lot of teaching. A lot of yours are to teach stitches, and so it reminds me of old time samplers.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
which is inspired by.
Yeah. Now, I have a question because. You know, a lot of people who embroider use a hoop, and a lot of people don't. Maybe less people don't. But I kind of in the camp of I often don't, but I know that there's probably reasons why I should. Can you just tell me a little bit about hooping versus not hooping?
Well, I mean, I'm an advocate for there's lots of different ways to embroider, and none of them are wrong. So I like to use a hoop, but if you don't like to use a hoop, that's fine too. But the reason I like to use a hoop, since you asked, is that it helps to maintain the tension on the fabric so that your hands don't have to do that. And so I think using an embroidery hoop can lessen the tension on your hands and allow you to embroider longer with less hand strain.
So
it just kind of keeps everything tight.
Yeah, keeps it tight. You know, that's the one thing that I find that's difficult in the hoop for me. So maybe you have a tip for this, is that I feel like I don't get the same flexibility, and that might just be my embroidery style, because it's firm in there.
Oh, because are you saying maybe you get the embroidery hoop in one spot and then you think like, but I don't want to embroider what's in the hoop. I want to embroider what's outside the hoop.
Or that it's just too straight, that I can't, like, rock the stitch or make the stitch the way.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, with some stitches, like the running stitch, it's much easier if you have less tension on your fabric, for sure, yeah. So I think some stitches, like the running stitch, might be easier without the hoop, but other stitches, specifically the French knot, it's much, much, much easier with the hoop, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And
we're going to say hi to...
If you're transferring an image or something, that can make it much easier if you have a hoop so your fabric's nice and flat. But, yeah.
That's a really good thing. I'm going to try it. I'm going to give it a try again because I really haven't... I was a self-taught embroiderer from a little girl. So, you know, I have like some probably bad habits that, you know, taught myself. And also I want to say hi to the baby because I'm sure people can hear him cooing there. You're a new mom. So,
Yes. I'm here with Leo, who's just 8 weeks old. So far, so good. I'm glad he's not too upset right now.
Okay, so we have just a couple of minutes. Give me a little tip about working with some found objects. What is your current favorite one to work with?
Oh, well, the found object that I work with in my artwork is found embroidery. So things like doilies and... pillowcases and things like that. And they are really easy to find at thrift stores and rummage sales and antique shops, although they tend to be more expensive at antique shops. And you can I have so many, and one of the ways that I've collected a lot of them is through looking on eBay for what's called cutter lots of embroidery. So things that have lots of stains, and the stain areas are usually on the part of the textile that's not embroidered. So the a pillowcase might have a big stain from somebody's head sleeping on it for years and years, but the embroidery is just at the end where the pillow goes into the case. So that part almost never has a stain on it. So things like that are great to collect and cut up and sort of darn back together, which is a really fun way to get a lot of instant texture and color for a project.
Plus, people have a lot of things from their family that they might want to actually incorporate in, and see it versus leaving it in a box in the attic. So
exactly. Yeah. I think a lot of, you know, lots and lots of people have drawers full of this stuff that they just don't know what to do with, which is why there's so much of it at thrift stores. So, yeah, a great place to find it is to ask around.
Ask around, ask your grandma, ask what your mom's got in the bottom drawer of her dresser.
Yeah, especially this time of year, people are getting together with their families and visiting relatives. So ask, you never know until you ask.
Also, you do have some online workshops, so people can find them at Creative Bug, right?
Yes, exactly. Yep, there's a few workshops based on samplers and then some more a transfer workshop, and there's a holiday napkin workshop, which is perfect for this time of year and a fun thing to do with your family when you're getting together at hitting them up for embroidery.
And while you're looking for that embroidery, we're going to do something with it. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So is there one thing, Rebecca, that you are interested in trying? We have about a minute.
I couldn't quite hear your question. Say it again.
We have just a real short. Do you have one thing you're trying now, like a technique or something?
Oh, I'm trying this new transfer material from Sulky Salvi that's called Sticky Salvi. For years, I've been using their water-soluble Sulky Salvi, and I just started trying out their Sticky Salvi, and it's proving to be really awesome. I wish I knew about it before. Wish I had known about it before the book came out, because it's a really cool product.
Ah, okay. So that's something new people could go and find and give it a try. Could you put that on the back, right?
No, you can put it on the back as a stabilizer, but since it's water soluble, you can also draw on it and you can trace on it and then stick it to the front of your project and embroider through it, and then it dissolves when you're done. So it's a great, really easy way to transfer an image.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. This has been wonderful. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks, you too, Pat.
Okay.
Happy holidays.
Quilts and you more. Too. Bye-bye.
Quilt sampler. All available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back. This is Pat Sloan from American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast, and I want you to get Rebecca's website. It's Rebecca Ringquist, RingQuist.com. So you can check also at our website and just search her name, and you'll get the link there after the show. So, you know, one of the wonderful things about American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine is we do have several special publications, sister publications, and one of them is Quilts and More. And during this year, every issue of Quilts and More, Sandra Clemens was doing and designed and hosted a 4-block sampler. So I thought it'd be really fun to talk about that and a few other things she's doing in the quilt world. So hi, Sandra, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, this is so much fun to have you on here. We got a chance to just say hello really briefly at the trade show. I'm glad we bumped into each other.
Yeah, I went to your schoolhouse and saw all the lovely things you had coming out. So, and then saw you there at your booth, and yeah, that was fun.
It's always nice to be able to connect before we talk. Give me a little backstory. How did you get into making quilts?
Well, I grew up with a family of do-it-yourselfers. My dad always did things in the garage, woodworking and such, and my mom sewed. And so when I think about my upbringing, it always includes a family who always enjoyed making things. So then about after college, it was about that time where, you know, I had some extra money in my pocket, and I was thinking about, you know, going out there and purchasing my first sewing machine. And coincidentally, I met a boy in Denver, and he took me back to his parents' home in Missouri. And there in the decor of their house were these amazing quilts made by both his grandmother and great-grandmother.
Oh, wow.
And one in particular really stood out to me, and it was a crazy quilt made by his great-grandmother. And this quilt was just so special to me. And then it was that quilt that I knew I wanted to learn how to quilt. So got back into Denver, bought a machine. I started reading quilt books and taking classes at my local quilt shop. And here we are about 12 years or so later. That boy is now my husband, and we have a lovely 4-year-old daughter. And I still get to appreciate all of his family's quilts.
So you married him so that you could go see the quilts. Is that how?
Yeah.
We won't tell him that. That is. I don't have any family quilts until I married into a family with quilts. My personal family didn't have quilt makers, so I can totally relate. When you started doing this sampler for Quilts and More, what was the goal of the project? You know, were you gearing it to new quilt makers to get them excited, or for people to try different techniques?
Well, really, I guess I come from at the time. I mean, really, what makes this quilt so unique to me is that at the time, I was going to my first quilt market, and I was just very eager, and I had a lot of quilt designs that I wanted to show. And when it was, I remember it was one morning, and my daughter was playing in the yard. My husband and I were drinking coffee on the porch. And, you know, I've always blended modern and traditional together, and so I, you know, just picked out some blocks that I thought were really lovely, and I wanted them to have a progression in them. Mm-hmm. The original design actually had 9 blocks, and so Quilts and More decided to select 4 of the blocks, and that's what became the sampler. So,
yeah, I think it's it looks like one that probably encouraged a lot of people to give it a try, because there's it's different. The blocks are different, and you also did them in solids. Did you decide that so people would not get so keyed in on a fabric line?
I really focused on color, and that's why I picked the solids. You know, I saw that in the industry there was a movement of solids and people using solids. And there was a lot out there that had either like a white background or a gray background. And I just wanted to do something that was just a little bit different, you know, outside of the white or the gray type background. And you know, honestly, I laid out my color pencils out on my porch, and, you know, my daughter was there kind of, you know, she always has to, you know, get her hands into whatever I'm doing. And, I mean, there were these pencils that were together, and I was like, that looks actually kind of good together. Let me play with that. And that's how it started for me. Usually picking colors not always so random like that, but mm-hmm. in that instance, it was very random for me.
That's really fun. I love that. We should just all empty our pencil boxes and see what falls next to each other. You know, that'd be the new way, Sandra, for designing, I think. Now, one of the questions that we're asking designers during these last 2 months of the year was if you have sort of a secret to better quilt making or a tip for better quilt making that you want to share with us.
Yeah, I would encourage people to really leap outside of the kitting package. You know, you see a lovely quilt, you love how it's pieced, and there's a kit that goes along with that. And not that there's anything wrong with kitting, mm-hmm. but I think for your unique style to surface is when you're really able to pick your own color palette and pick your own fabrics. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would push people towards. You know, I feel a lot of times the feedback is that, you know, they want some type of algorithm or formula or they want to pull out the color wheel to, you know, make sure that they're, you know, getting this perfect color scheme, but it doesn't have to be that technical. Really, anything that you find pretty, whether it's like a china dish or a photograph or a magazine clipping or colors from your flower garden, whatever that it is, you know, use that to select your color scheme for your fabric. And, I mean, you can even take that inspiration just even a step further. Also, consider, you know, while you're looking at that inspiration, consider the weight of color, how mm-hmm. much of blue was used in it, how much of green was used in it. And so when you start picking your fabrics to match those colors, you'll then know what type of weight or how many more fabrics to use of, say, a navy color. And so that's what I would try to encourage people to do, because when you take that extra step, mm-hmm. I think it really starts to, I really believe it brings out something outside of you that makes it unique and personal to you.
You know, and you could even just change out some of the fabrics. If you saw that you liked most of them, well, maybe you trade out a few, you know, just
yeah.
as a... You know, so that it does add your own personal style to the quilt. I really like where you said about looking at the weight of color within an object that you like the colors, because that's, I think people don't know why they like sometimes. You look at something and say, mm-hmm. I really like that. And you don't realize it's only got like a pop of blue. So when you're doing that, tell me how you would take, let's say you have a china plate, like you, your example, and there's, how would you take that and then go to your fabric and lay out something similar? Would you take big swatches, or how would someone do that?
Well, I always start off in my stash, to whatever that I have in my stash. And I always pull out more than what I need. And, I'll have the plate there, and I'll have whatever, you know, whether they're, you know, leftover pieces from a layer cake or a fat quarter bundle or half yards, whatever that it is, I start laying them all out. And I will put them in color wheel order.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, you know, just really then I think it becomes personal taste. You know, I try to match the fabric to the color that's in the plate. But then say you have, you know, three that are really, really similar, you mm-hmm. know, and maybe you don't need all three. And that's when you can, you know, play around with, you know, what you're going to put in, what you're going to put out, and you're looking at the full spectrum of fabric that you have there.
Great. Those are great tips. It's a great way to use an item that you like and sort of analyze it versus just saying, oh, I really like that. Now, we have about a minute, Sandra. Tell me about your book coming out called Scrap Patchwork.
So, yes, I'm really excited about this. It was a year and a half in the making, and that probably didn't even include the time with me designing the quilts or pulling together the concept for it. Mm-hmm. So it's my first one. It has 13 quilts that are all traditionally modern quilts. All of them do have alternate settings that go along with these quilts that you can make, as well as further ideas on different types of color schemes that you can use. So this provides so many more options for a quilter to make that quilt special to them. There are chapters dedicated to how to organize your stash and also selecting color for your quilt. And all of this will get tied in to the instructions for the quilt pattern. So I'm really excited about this book.
Oh, it looks fabulous. The cover is gorgeous. You have some spectacular quilts on there, and everybody loves scrap quilts. I don't know anybody that doesn't, even if it's controlled scrappy, right?
Yes.
Right. Well, Sandra, this has been so much fun. Everybody can visit you at sandraclemens.blogspot.com. Thanks for being here.
Yes, thanks for having me.
We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I am your host, Pat Sloan. If you are following Mickey Dupree's work, you will know that she is a very talented author and a teacher. And I always like to think of her as a person who takes a shape and works that shape into so many variations that you probably don't need another shape ever to make a zillion different kinds of quilts. She has written many books. Her style has been gone from one sort of like an art type style, and now she has been working in a more traditional type style, but always connected. Everything is always connected. And so I'm really excited, Mickey, to have you here. Thanks for being on.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Would you give me just a small short about your journey? I mean, how did you got into quilt making, but then you've always made it your own and made your signature. What's your sort of journey there?
Well, first, let me share with you like a little tagline or motto that I have, and that is that there's enough fabric in the stash to make both art and traditional quilts, because I've always made both. Mm-hmm. It's just early on in my career, the quilting industry took notice of my art quilts. But if you look at some of the art quilts, there's always been traditional piecework done for backgrounds and things of that nature. And now I just feel like my life has done a little bit of a 360 turn with, you know, the popularity of piece texies, and then now my new book, Half Scrap Quilts. So, you know, it's just me. I've always made both.
Right.
I love love both. So
I know it's always funny how I sometimes have that same thing. I started out being known for one particular colorway, which I only mm-hmm. did for a very short period of time. And so, but there's still people who just only remember that, you know, and it's interesting because all of our work does connect. It's always got your own style in it, doesn't it?
Yes. And well, to say one of the nicest compliments I've received when Peace Texas came out is someone said, you took hexagons and you made them art quilts. You gave them an arty look. And I thought, well, that was really nice. And yes, it's all connected.
Right. It's all connected. You did, several books on the hexagons. And really, they are amazingly unique.
Thank you.
Every time I'm like, wow. You know, it's like you would not ever need another thing. Just make hexagons the rest of your life. But there's more to life, isn't there? Because you have right now a new book called Half Scrap Quilts. And take them and make them yours. So tell me about the concepts for this book.
So Half Scrap Quilts, well, Half Scrap is how I describe when I'm making traditional quilts. I like to have somewhere between 3 to 5 fabrics in my quilts that's consistent, mm-hmm. and then scrap out the rest. Mm. So there's always some, a fabric that or two that pulls your eye through the whole thing. And so I just started calling them half scrap quilts. And so when it came time to, doing this book, that just seemed like the natural title to give it.
I love the title. I think it's so fun. I think some people refer to that maybe a little bit as like a controlled scrappy where they have some calmness or some unity. That might be a better word. Mm-hmm. So tell me how you approach building a color palette for a scrap quilt.
Well, like most quilters, a lot of times it is a fabric. I mean, that's mm-hmm. why I love to make the half scrap quilts because there's so many beautiful fabrics out there. And, something will call to you when you're in the quilt shop and you just have to buy, a yard or two. But I also tell people, go through magazines, illustrated books, and just look at the colors in a picture and tag, a page that catches your eye, and then go back to that and pull the colors out to build your palette. We surround ourselves with things that we find appealing. I even tell my students, think of your favorite room in the house and the colors you have in it, and then start your palette from there. Mm-hmm. So there's several different ways of, being able to pull. But I do like to, when I'm putting together a palette, I have always what I call a crazy ant fabric in there. And I describe colors like families. So mm-hmm. let's just say you can have the green family. And the green family can have members in it all the way from avocado green to deep, blue green. Because mm-hmm. they're all part of the green family. But then you might have, a Kelly green in there. And it might have a print that makes it just stand out a little bit. And so that becomes the crazy ant. Because all families have a crazy aunt, if they're honest.
Yeah.
And she's the life of the party.
Yeah.
She is who everyone is still talking about at, Easter from Christmas.
Right.
and that's the fabric that makes people stop and look at your quilt again.
Mm-hmm.
Catches their eye.
Right.
You don't have to overdo it. She just needs to be, shown a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Be sure the aunt just doesn't get out of control. That would be.
Yes. Yes. But, and that's why I always, encourage students and, even obviously someone who just may not take a workshop with me but, purchases one of my books is mm-hmm. push yourself a little bit. Maybe not have everything exactly match but still stay in the same family. And most of all, I love when people take my pattern and make them their own, which is, the second part of the title of the book. I mm-hmm. like when people play with it a little bit, use the pattern as a springboard for their own creativity. So,
yeah, it's very exciting to see that and have somebody send a photo and you get to See how they made their own version.
I say as a designer, that is what I live for. I like mm-hmm. to see that someone took and ran with it a little bit further, you know.
So I have a question on the that I know a lot of people, because I also teach, and so, you know, and I listen to people on my communities, and you know, one of the things they have trouble with, Mickey, and I'm sure you see it too, is that they don't know when is enough or when is too much. Like, they second guess themselves and triple guess themselves. What can people do to not like overthink?
Well, I say if you're starting to feel uncomfortable with it, if something is bothering you about a combination or as you said, a little too much, mm-hmm. listen to that voice in your head. If you have the time, walk away from the project for an hour or two and come back to it with fresh eyes. And I always tell my students, make a few practice blocks. Before you commit to an entire palette, play around with the colors, make these practice blocks. They become, in my quilts, the back art. You know, mm-hmm. the practice blocks land up mm-hmm. on the back of the quilts. And, you know, listen to the voice in your own head. Push it a little bit, but if you're uncomfortable with it, then it's okay to back down too. Not everyone is going to be comfortable with, say, 20 different fabrics in a block. Mm-hmm. So if 8 does it for you, then 8 does it for me too.
Yeah.
You know, because I honestly believe we all see color a little differently too.
So, you know, yeah, I think you're right, because one person can look at something and the next person, and they're putting different combinations right. together.
Right. And it's what your eyes are comfortable. I mean, it's your quilt. You're going to be living with it, so make sure you love it.
we're kindred spirits there. I just tell people that too, because if you don't love it, you're not going to love it anymore after you leave here.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And listen, this is the voice of experience, because mm-hmm. I do what I'll work on a project and then fall out of love with it. I always say I'm dating a quilt. and then I'll put it to the side. And I go through my studio every 5 years and look at all the UFOs and decide, are we going to continue a relationship or are we done?
Yeah.
And then if it's truly we're done, I take all the fabric, put it back in the stash, and whatever has been completed becomes back art on another quilt. And just releasing that is mm-hmm. so freeing, not, you know, being tied to that project forever in case it just didn't work out, you know.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent advice. Yeah, get that guilt gone.
Yes. You know,
so tell me
that project and move on.
Move on. You do a lot of teaching. So tell me a bit about your workshops. What do you do in them? I know you have several style workshops, but what's kind
yes.
of the base?
Well, we have the Peace Texty workshop, which is by far the most popular workshop right now. But I'm also, you know, every year I do what I call my on the road project. You know, as a professional teacher, when we're traveling, of course, we in our off time want to be working on something because we're so excited after spending the day with our students.
Right.
But our personal space in our suitcase is very limited.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some teachers knit, crochet. I've done both. But I like to hand piece. So I, you know, did a hand piecing project where people on my Facebook page then followed me throughout the whole year. Hand piecing last year, it was castle wall blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And then they became online lessons for this whole color family theory that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, I would show the fabrics that I'm going to use in a block and explain why they would be used and that. And so it just branched out, and people are wanting more hand piecing workshops. So now I'm teaching hand piecing. And now we're going to have all the workshops based off, you know, the quilts and half scraps. So mm-hmm. There's quite a selection.
Yeah. So when people come to a class with you, are they generally going to, is it more technique based? Do you also complete a small project? What happens?
It is technique, but it is also project based. But I try to keep the projects to what I call fat quarter size or under. I do try to keep them small because, you know, there's a lot of stress sometimes in a workshop, and people, I just want them to have something small so they feel that sense of accomplishment. Mm-hmm. So even like with the big quilt patterns, I'm going to always have like a table runner that they can, mm-hmm. what they've done in the workshop, they can apply to a table runner. So it is, you know, a good hybrid. It's a color class always, and, you know, a technique, and there is a project. There, you know, you're going to walk out with something that you can apply to something.
Good, because there are people who like to finish something. They want to, you know, they're not good at the practice thing, so they want to just.
Well, yeah, and I have found, because we do this whole, no matter what the project is, there's always this color talk. Mm-hmm. And then people are like, oh, I wish I would have bought this fabric or that. So they're working with what they have now. Let's give them a small project, and then they can maybe change up the colors when they get home.
Right.
And make
it
big.
Yeah, it's perfect. Perfect. So when you go to a quilt show, Mickey, what is it that attracts you first? Or, you know, what do you like to look at a quilt show?
Well, I'd probably buck the trend, and I actually head to the quilt first. I know most head to the vendors, but I have to see those quilts. And I probably, surprisingly, I head to the traditional quilts. Mm-hmm. They are just, you know, that's where I start. And then I spend my time also with the, you know, with art quilts. I'm still making art quilts. They're just not going to the shows now. They're going directly to galleries. And, you know, then of course I hit those vendors.
Yeah.
Because I'm all pumped up then.
Yeah, right. Yeah, now you know what you want to look for. So you've gone out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you interested? We have maybe about 30 seconds. When you go to see a quilt in the quilt show, are you interested in the color, the techniques?
It's color. For me, it's all about color and texture. Because we have print in our fabric, so we have texture. And I love to see the juxtaposition of different textures next to each other.
Yeah. So even if that texture would be a print, that one would be maybe a stripe versus, you know.
Like a stripe next to a floral. I like to, you know, that is visually just gets my eyes wide open, and I just take it all in.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mickey, this has been so wonderful. Thank you for sharing with me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Visit Mickey at mdquilts.com. We'll be right back.
Bye, Ken.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am going to wrap up the show today with Diane Knott, who is just a very talented quilter, and you have probably seen her work out there on the internet, and we are going to learn all about it. So, Diane, how are you?
I'm great, Pat. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I am so excited to be chatting with you. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
You know, you told me that about 20 years ago, you know, you when your daughter was born, you made a quilt, and then later, you know, you got back into it. How did you decide to turn it into a business?
Well, I was actually homeschooling my children through their middle school years, and I have three kids, and when they all went back to high school, I had a lot of free time on my hands and decided I needed to do something. And it sort of came about with a friend was drawing out a quilt I had put in a quilt show, and she couldn't figure out how I put it together, so I drew it out for her and wrote the instructions, and she said, "Wow, you're really good at that. You should do that." And next thing I knew, Butterfly Thread Quilting was born.
Oh, my gosh. You should just do that, Diane. You just go on out there and write all these patterns. You're like, okay, fine.
So I did.
Oh, my gosh. You know, recently we kind of got to know each other because I was sharing some of the projects that you had done for Craftsy for their free pattern program, because you are an editor or a writer for their blog. How did you end up with that job?
That was just kind of one of those things that fell in my lap. I was writing my blog, and I enjoyed it. And quite a few people read it, apparently. And someone at Craftsy was reading it, and she emailed me and asked me if I'd be willing to write for Craftsy. And so I said, sure. And they really give me a lot of freedom as far as what I want to write and what I want to share. And I thought it would be fun to share some scrappy blocks of the month, because scrappy is what I do and what I love. And it's been a really... Apparently, it's been, you know, popular with a lot of people, and you noticed it, so that was exciting for me.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, you really have very adorable designs, so, you know, that's...
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Let's talk about scrap quilts, because, like you said, that is one thing that you love to do. Are you like the scrap quilter that throws everything in there, or are you more controlled scrappy?
Well, I have some strategies for that. And sometimes I'm an, you know, anything goes kind of girl, and sometimes I'm, you know, I have more of a mission or more of a specific goal in mind. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how my book was born, in that I was, had people ask me in my workshops, well, how did you decide to only put three colors in this quilt? Or how did you decide that, you know, this pink was going to be the feature of this quilt? And that's sort of my process that I go through, is I have these different secrets. And, I see something, and whenever I look at a quilt, I think, first of all, that quilt would be better with 500 fabrics instead of 5. and then I decide from there, how am I going to go about doing that?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, you know, that's where I get started anyway.
So, you know, I love the idea of having a lot of that fabric to work from. Are you, how are you maintaining that before you use it? Because, you know, don't you like that word, maintaining that? Because you have to figure out something to do with it before you put it in a quilt. What is your strategy for that?
Well, I have a couple of strategies, and sometimes I'm more successful than others, but I am very lucky in that I have a whole room dedicated just to quilting, and I can, I do have a fairly decent amount of storage, and I buy fabric that I love, and I typically buy back quarters or a third of yard cut, and unless it's something really, really special that I think needs to be a border, or I need to have more of it, then I'll buy 2 to 5 yards. Mm-hmm. I keep my fabric stored by color, because for me, that's just what works for me. Mm-hmm. And so I'll have a whole bin of greens, a whole bin of oranges, a whole bin of reds. Although I do sort of have this love affair going on with polka dots, So they have their own section where I store them. But once the fabric gets smaller than, a fat 8, I'll either cut it into strips and put it in with my strips, or if it gets really tiny, I put it in a basket that's for my bits. And so I call my little bits go in one basket, my strips go in a basket, and if they're larger than that, they get organized by color.
So when you have the strips and they're organized by color, then do you put those colors with the fat quarters and above sizes, or are they in a separate place?
No, they're in a separate place.
Okay. All right. So when you get ready to work on a scrap quilt, how do you approach getting the colors you want? Because, you know, maybe you want your scrap quilt to look, you know, maybe more blue or more red, you know, but you want it to be really scrappy. How do you approach that?
Well, if I'm going to need, I live by the theory more is better. And if I'm going to need strips, then I'll probably cut 3, 4, 5 times more strips than I need. Or I'll pull out, you know, a whole palette of the colors that I want to use. And then I'll start editing from there, and I'll notice that the ones I like the best, I tend to go back to more and more. But generally, it's not a very restrained process. I definitely go with the more is better.
Yeah. So if you are looking, let's say you're pulling out gold colors, will you have a whole spectrum of like pale yellow to deep, almost brown, or will you control it a bit more?
Generally, I like to use the whole spectrum, but I also make extra blocks. So if I end up with one or two that stand out a bit too much or don't seem to quite fit in, then, you know, then I don't have to use them.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't mind sort of wasting a couple, you know.
Oh, well, it's never really wasted because then it can go on the back, or it can go in another project, or it can, you know, I have the extra leftover blocks, those little pumpkin blocks that you featured on your blog. I really liked those, and I ended up making like 40 of them.
Oh,
and
my
I only needed about 20 for the quilt. But those other pumpkins aren't wasted. They're just waiting.
They're just
for
waiting.
The right project along.
Oh, well, we have pumpkins in waiting at Diane's house. So
we do.
Okay, so now I need to ask this. You know, it's like one thing leads to another question. Where do you keep these pumpkins in waiting and other things? Do you keep them all, you know, because I just have this basket I've been throwing all this miscellaneous stuff in. Are you more organized than me?
Well, that really depends on what day of the week it is, because I have really good intentions and I get really organized, and then it slowly falls apart, and then I get after it again. But I actually have a big design wall that I work on, but I have a smaller design wall that I pin block fits to so that they're still up. I can see them, and they don't, you know, so I don't forget about them, but they're out of the way. So I have probably 6 or 7 different block sets just pinned to that wall. And I know that when I get the right inspiration or I get the time to get back to them, that they'll probably be one of my next projects.
Well, that's a good idea, to just sort of keep it out where you can see it and think on it. So when does your book come out, Diane?
It comes out in March.
Okay. And how many projects are in it?
There's 16 quilts.
Ooh. And you have both applique and mostly patchwork, but a little bit of applique.
I do. It is mostly patchwork, but I do have a few quilts with some applique on them and a couple of different applique styles, wool applique, and as well as traditional applique.
Yeah. I like the cover quilt.
Thank you.
With the flowers. What's the name of that one?
That one's called Crazy Daisy.
Yeah. It's cute. And you used a text print behind the flowers. Do you collect that type of fabric, or was that just, you know, happenstance?
I do. I do. I love text prints, and I do collect them. And anything that particular print was kind of small and subtle, and so when I acquired that, I was sure that was going to be a background for something, because I didn't want it to get all chopped up and totally lost.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that it would be subtle enough that it could serve it as a good background.
So what do you write about on your website? Because you also write at Craftsy, but you write all the time at your own site.
Oh, gosh. I share all kinds of stuff, mostly the projects I'm working on or the books I'm reading or the sometimes recipes. There's always a few adventures on there as well. I have a puppy who has been quite the star the past year, a golden retriever puppy who is very naughty. So he gets his photo taken a lot, and he ends up on there based on what thing he's gotten into lately. But, yeah. But it's 90% quilting.
Yeah, no, that's so funny. I know, puppies is like any baby animals is like, oh my goodness, yeah. They're just nuts. So tell me one last thing. When you go to a quilt show, what is the thing that you like to do first?
I like to look at the quilts first. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that's what it's all about. I love to look at the quilts, and I love to get inspired by the quilts. If there's vintage quilts there, those are hands down my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Or designs inspired by vintage quilts. I think that I look at quilts and think how, you know, what part of that is going to make an appearance in one of my quilts? What part of that is going to inspire me as far as a color combination or a block pattern or a border idea? And then, you know, after I've seen the quilt and spent some time with the quilt, you know, then I like to walk around and really usually enjoy the special exhibits, the collections of quilts that have a story or a theme with them. Really enjoy those a lot.
And, Diane, that is so, we're out of time. That is just, I know, it goes fast. Thank you so much. I want to tell everybody to visit you at butterflythreadsquilting.com. And thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Pat.
We'll be right back. Thank you for...
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.